Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein with a response of the day for the 22nd day of Tevet. Today we're going to see Rav Moshe Feinstein's discussion of why we need mechitzot. This is from Shut Igrot Moshe Or HaChaim, Chelek Aleph, the first volume of the Or HaChaim. First time he dealt with Or HaChaim issues. Siman Lamed Tet, response number 39. It's from Chaf Bet Tevet, from the 22nd of Tevet of Tafshin Vav, which is probably early 1946. It might be late 1945, but it's early 1946, probably. Yeah, it's in January of 1946. I just checked on the calendar the Bar Ilan CD-ROM response it gives you. 22nd of Tevet is a date that I remember well because it's the date that I happen to have gotten married on, and that happened in December of a year, not in January. So there are times when even the 22nd of Tevet can still be in December, but this year, it was in the beginning of 1946, and the principal of Yeshiva Tor V'Das, or the Menahel, I think the administrator of Tor V'Das, writes him to have him explain. So you have to remember, in 1946, Moshe Feinstein is about 51 years old, which means he's, first of all, embarrassingly to me, younger than I am right now, but he's relatively new to America, and yet he's an important Rav already. He is Rav Moshe Feinstein. There are, at the time, other important posek in America. He's not yet the premier posek in America. He's an important man, but there are other posek as well. And remember that he doesn't publish his first volume of responsa until a few years after this. So the head of Tor V'Das knows he is in some way, turns to him to find out, can you tell us about the obligation of mechitzah? Because there have unfortunately become an issue. In the 1940s, it's important to remember as part of Jewish history, especially for us living in our times, that in the 1940s and 50s, and maybe even into the 60s, the battle over mechitzah was a huge battle for orthodoxy. There were many, many people who claimed that you could still be orthodox even if you didn't have a mechitzah in your shul. And the rabbanim of the time, including obviously Rav Moshe Feinstein, but others as well, had to take firm stands on these issues in ways that weren't comfortable, weren't easy. And then there were people around them saying, you know, I don't know why you're being such a stickler about this, especially since we don't see any really good reason why you have to have a mechitza. So that was the question the head of the Menahel of Tor V'Das, the administrator of Tor V'Das, wants to know from Moshe Feinstein: why do we have to have a mechitza? And to what extent is it, how important a thing is it? Is it like a derabbanan? Is it a custom? Is it a whatever? And how high does it have to be? So that's the question being posed on the 22nd of Tevet, and then Moshe Feinstein is answering the 22nd of Tevet of Tafshin Vav. Let's thank the OU, Rabbi Jacob Bromwitz and David Hochhauser, for their help putting these shiurim online and making them available to you. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein says he thinks the requirement of mechitza, and then he's very clear that the requirement of mechitza is not, he thinks, fulfilled by having men sit on one side, women sit on another side. I mean, you could have said the whole point of mechitza is separate seating, and that as long as there's separate seating, that we can get away with that. He says, no, he doesn't think it's true, and he also claims that it's d'oraita, that it is the Torah requirement. We'll see how he gets there in a minute, but it's an important point to notice that, not that it's ever okay to treat the Rabbanans lightly, but once you get into the Rabbanans, there are various leniencies the halakhic system put into it, and there are some times when the halakhic system will allow, that's a complicated question, I'm not saying always at all, but there's something that the halakhic system will allow, that if a chazal created something, there are ways to get around it, or to let it sort of fade away over time. So theoretically, and I'm not saying this is true, but theoretically, if you held that mechitza was a derabbanan, was created by the rabbis for some specific purpose, then if you could argue that that purpose has completely gone away, so then you wouldn't be able to say, so we can ignore the thing, but you might be able to find workarounds or legal fictions and things like that to help us avoid it. So Rav Moshe Feinstein is saying he doesn't think it's true. He thinks it's a d'oraita. So how did you get to the d'oraita? This is the proof he's going to offer, and the question will be, to some extent, how convincing you find the proof or how willing you are to just trust Rav Moshe Feinstein's instincts. But his proof is from the Gemara in Sukkah. Gemara in Sukkah in the Nun, the Aleph of Bet, and further, talks about the fact that when it came to Simchat Beit HaShoeva, when it came to on Sukkot, after the first day of Sukkot, you'd have these great celebrations as part of the daily Nisuch HaMayim, as part of the libation of water, which is part of the Chag HaSukkot, serving as the holiday in which we pray for rain and which we think we're being judged about rain. So as part of all of that, you'd have these great celebrations because of the expectation that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that Hashem will give us the rain that we need over the course of the coming year. So Simchat Beit HaShoeva were these huge nightly celebrations, and there are Gemaras that talk about the fact that you never saw that celebration, you never saw a real simcha in your life. So part of that discussion is that the Gemara says that, and some of the details we're not going to get into really, but they are sort of relevant to the discussion. The Gemara worried about men and women mixing together for reasons that are not perfectly clear, but we'll see them, the Rav Moshe Feinstein will understand them in a particular way. And after trying a few solutions, they first tried putting, I think, the women on the inside, the men on the outside. And then that didn't work. And they tried putting the men on the outside, the men on the inside, the women on the outside. And that didn't work because there was still mixing of the going on that they didn't like. So then they started building a gzustra. They would build a balcony. The women go up on the balcony and the men would stay down below. Problem with that solution is that the Gemara raises is that there's a pasuk about the Beis HaMikdash which says Hakol Bichtav, that everything about the building of the Beis HaMikdash was in writing, and it was built off of written instructions. It was a very exact set of instructions. How can you all of a sudden build a new structure? How can you add basically to the Beit HaMikdash? That's an interesting, hard question of its own, since it's clear to everybody that the Beit HaMikdash that Shlomo HaMelech built was not exactly the same as the Mishkan in the desert. So there it says Hakol Bechtav, and then the Beit HaMikdash they built and the second Beit HaMikdash wasn't exactly the same, and the third Beit HaMikdash won't necessarily be the exact same either. So the lines of that are worth talking about. But the Gemara's answer is Rav says, Dikra Ashkechu. They found a pasuk that makes clear, Shetzarich Lahavdil Anashim V'Nashim. That makes it clear that you have to separate men from women. So Rav Moshe Fein says, look there. So I looked it up a little bit. And Gemara, at the very end of the Aleph and Beis, Amarav, Kra'ach Shkechu V'Darish, turning now onto the Beis Amad Aleph, to Pasuk in Zechariah in the 12th chapter, talking about a completely different future, having nothing to do with Beit HaMikdash. But it says, in the future, V'Safda Ha'aretz Mishpachot Mishpachot, that the land, for whatever tragedy Zechariah is talking about, the land, the people of the land will mourn, by family, Mishpachat Beit David Levad, the families, let's say, of the house of David, will be on their own from other families, Unishehem Levad, and their women will be mourning on their own, Amru V'halod Zvarim Kal V'chomer. So it seems like it's a good Kal V'chomer, a good reason that you'd say in the future, when people you think are firmer and they're more enlightened and aware of Kodesh Baruch Hu, it says nonetheless you have to separate men and women, all the more so now. Now we'll get back to the mourning question in a second, right? That would seem to be also a good support for those who, and I've been in houses of mourning like this, who think that you should have a makita in a house of mourning, because that's what the source of verse for that issue is, in Rav Moshe Feinstein's reasoning. In any case, the way the Gemara presents it, he says, shows you that they think that it's incorporated in this pasuk. This pasuk assumes that there is an obligation to have men and women separate, not just in the case of that mourning that there'll be in the time of the future, but in the case of the Simchot Beit HaShoeva, in the case of the gatherings to celebrate the libating of the water, they use it as a Kal V'chomer, so that means they think it's incorporated in that original verse. But Yimei HaKisud Rabbanan, if it's only the Rabbanan, that you wouldn't say that it's all part of a verse, because you don't get derabbanans out of a verse. When you use a verse for derabbanans, you call it an asmachta. Here it sounds like derabbanans, it's a real actual verse. Especially since the counterbalance there was there's a different pasuk that says that everything about the Beit HaMikdash had been handed down in very specific instructions and in writing, so that you would need some kind of writing to tell you, some kind of written verse to tell you. So in derabbanan, you run into that same problem that we started off with. The problem we started off with was that it seems like when it comes to the Beit HaMikdash, you're not allowed to have derabbanan additions to the Beit HaMikdash. So it seems like if the answer is going to be, well, we have a pasuk for it, and therefore it fits the standard of Hakol Bichtav, sounds like that verse is a d'oraita verse. You might think to point out that it's not a pasuk in the Torah, it's a pasuk in Navi, it's a pasuk in Zechariah. So Moshe Feinstein points out the well-known idea that there are times that when we see things in Navi, we don't say that that's a new idea. The Navi is not teaching us something. It's revealing something that was always true, but that might not have been as explicit in the verses of the Torah as we thought. So there are times when, and sometimes yes and sometimes no, there are times when you have things in Navi and you say, well, that's just it's called Divrei Kabbalah, and you can have halachot that count as Divrei Kabbalah, and that's a status in halacha that's somewhere between a Doraita and a Darabbanan. But Rav Moshe Feinstein is saying he doesn't think that you can have a Divrei Kabbalah that would overcome or override the requirement of a Kol Bechtav, that everything about the Beit HaMikdash has to be according to very specific instructions, and therefore he assumes that in this instance, when the Pasuk in Zechariah tells you that the people, the men and the women will mourn separately, that's what the Gemara is understanding that to mean is A, it's a halacha, and B, it's a halacha, right, it's revealing something about an existing halacha, it's not telling us a new halacha. Now, what is that halacha of mourning separately? If it was halacha, says Rosh Feinstein, if it was halacha of Kalut Rosh, that you're not allowed, that men and women are not allowed to interact inappropriately. Right? Kalut Rosh is levity or lewdness. It's when men and women are not just you know, having a business meeting. Men and women are interacting in a, I think Kalas Rosh means in a way that either already is sexually charged in some way or has the, or easily leads to some kind of inappropriate charge or frisson or element to the interaction. He says, for that, you don't need this pasuk for it, because, first of all, it's well known, and also, if you look at the other times when they mention the prohibitions of Issei Rosh in the Talmud, in the Gemara, and halakhic sources, they never quote this pasuk. So he says, no, he thinks this pasuk is to tell you something different. It's telling you that, aside from whether there actually will be Kalat Rosh, you need a machitza. That even if, meaning, even if, let's say you have, you know, a group of people, whoever they are, who are very firm people and very fine people, and we don't really believe that there's going to be any Kalas Rosh if they get together, in at least some situations, such as the Hesped, such as the mourning that's going to go on in that future situation, the Rav Moshe Feinstein understands the pasuk to mean, you need a mechitza, regardless of whether there will actually be Kalas Rosh, whether the Kalas Rosh is the actual practical worry, you just need a machitza. And that's why it says, if it was said to the Nevi'im who were telling David and Shlomo how to build the Beit HaMikdash, if it was said to God and to Natan that you need a machitza, because obviously you need a machitza, because whenever there's a gathering of people, we'll get to the definition of gatherings of men and women, whenever those kinds of gatherings, you need a machitza, and that's not as a practical factor of avoiding Kalas Rosh, it's just a machitza to ensure there's no Kalas Rosh in terms of as a structural issue. So you might say, what makes you think that we knew that there would be men and women together in the Beit HaMikdash, such that you have to assume that it's embedded in the original order, the original mitzvah, or the original commandment to build a Beit HaMikdash would include necessarily the mechitza, because men and women are going to be there, and we're not allowed to have men and women mixing in such a way that could theoretically kill the Kalat Rosh. You say, when? How do you know? Maybe women were expected to stay away from the Beit HaMikdash. So he says it's not true, because you have the obligation of Hakel. Hakel happens once every 7 years, but there explicitly the Torah requires men, women, and children to come. And then once you have Hakel, you know, once you've done it, then it's there for whatever else happens, and therefore you know that you can build these kinds of structures. And so Simchas Beis HaShoeva will be another example of that. He's going to later in the response get to the idea of Chana, who comes to the Mishkan to pray for a son. He's not going to notice that that also seems to assume that women were going to be there. But in any case, even if you were theoretically going to argue that maybe women weren't going to the Beit HaMikdash, the answer is that's not true, because we know of at least one example. And once you have one example, even if you were only going to actually pull out a machitza every 7 years, once you have the idea of machitza built into the Beit HaMikdash, then it's an idea. Just suggesting to Rav Moshe Feinstein that, or pointing or proving to Rav Moshe Feinstein that machitza is embedded into the Beit HaMikdash as a d'oraita thing. It's got to be d'oraita because you're not allowed to build a Beit HaMikdash in any way other than what's actively commanded from a Kaddish Baruch. Now, even though he did say that the machitza isn't there specifically about the Isser of Kalas Rosh, because the prohibition of Kalas Rosh is prohibited anyway, and therefore you weren't allowed to do it, and machitza is a later solution to it. It is true, though, for him, that the point of machitza is that it completely stopped Kalas Rosh, meaning his understanding is that, yes, Kalas Rosh, improper levity between men and women, is prohibited. Theoretically, that could be, it could be left open to people to decide how they're going to avoid it. Meaning there's no specific halakha of how to avoid certain other things in life. You know, no great example comes to mind. Think about, let's say, not levity between men and women, but let's say men looking inappropriately at women or vice versa. So there's no specific, there are halakhos about you're not allowed to look at this, you're not allowed to look at that, right? But in terms of, let's say, you're walking around the streets and things come out your way, what do you do about it? So you turn your head away, whatever it is. But the standards that you use are not specifically said, I think, by halakhos of, you know, you have to wear these kinds of blinders in this kind of a way. So I could easily have imagined the Torah saying, yes, you can't have levity, and then leaving it up to various cultures and various societies to figure out how they're going to do it. Maybe one society would theoretically have said, we think men sitting separate from women is enough. And another society would say, we think even when we know our men and women, even when they're sitting together, as long as it's always husbands and wives with each other, we think that's enough. And another society would say, we think they need separate rooms from each other. It could have been left up to everybody's decision process. So emotional Feinstein is understanding the pasuk and Zechariah to tell us that in this case the Torah didn't leave it up to every decision process. The Torah required a machitza. And then it required the machitza. The point of the machitza, though, is that it stopped. It completely stopped Kalat Rosh, meaning we walk into a structure and the structure itself means there can't be Kalat Rosh. That tells you something about the machitza then. If the mechitza doesn't do that, mechitza doesn't perform that function, then it's not a valid mechitza. Meaning, again, I could have imagined a mechitza that's there to remind us not to have kalat rosh, remind us not to interact inappropriately between the have men and women interact inappropriately. And as long as the reminder is there, we fulfill the halacha of mechitza. But Moshe Feinstein is understanding the point of the mechitza is to make it largely impossible to have kalat rosh, because he says they tried some things for reminders and things like that. So Rashi says the women were originally, the women were on the outside of the Ezrat Nashim, and the women were on the inside of the Ezrat Nashim, and the men were on the outside on the courtyard of Har Abayit and in the Chil, which are parts outside of the Ezrat Nashim. And that's like a Mechitza Gedola, because there were not barriers between those sections, but those were clearly demarcated. So there was demarcation. So demarcation should be Mechitza, and apparently it didn't work, and it didn't work because everybody was going to stand at the openings to see what was going on with all the celebrations were happening inside the Azara, inside the Beit HaMikdash itself. So if you're looking through gates together, if you're looking, and that led to some mixing and interaction, these kinds of things, so that wasn't good enough, even though they were in separate sections with some kind of demarcation between the sections. Because if that was enough to be mechitza, you shouldn't have been allowed to build a new structure, because again, we don't build new structures in the Beit HaMikdash unless we have an absolute halachic reason requiring it. So the building of the balcony for the Simcha Beit HaShoeivah must mean that the other options they had until then had not. Now, I could have argued they hadn't practically fulfilled the function. But Moshe Feinstein is saying it's not that they didn't, the problem isn't they didn't practically do it, it's that by virtue of the fact they didn't practically do it, it taught us that we weren't used building the right mechitza, that the din, the halacha of mechitza is that it must perform this function. It wasn't, we need to avoid kalat rosh, it's that we're required to have a structure that stops kalat rosh from happening. Now, some might have argued that there the problem was yichud. It wasn't a problem of kalat rosh, it wasn't a problem of the interactions, it was you were worried that, you know, a man and a woman were going to be separated from the crowd, they were going to be all together. So he says it doesn't make sense to him, because first of all, that they started out with the women inside on the circle, and if yichud was the issue, you would have thought that would have been immediately the worst suggestion, because there's more possibility of yichud, because then if a man gets separated within that group, then you get into yichud questions. But the truth is, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, at similar space of Shoeva, there's so many women around, there's no real worry about yichud. Even according to the Rambam, who holds that, especially according to the Rambam, who holds that one man with many women doesn't count as yichud, because that many women, if there's a man in there, they won't, you know, stand by and watch as improper behavior, proper sexual behavior goes on, and they won't just, men and women, a man and a woman won't, in the times of the Gemara, and their assumption, won't just engage in inappropriate physical behavior when there are other people around in that way. Now, I have to say, I've been recently, every so often I'll see a movie where they'll talk about, you'll have, you know, they'll show you parties from the 50s, from the 60s, or something from today, where people just pair off and have, you know, and come close or actually have sexual relations with each other, and the whole group doesn't care about it. So even though there's lots of men and lots of women in that situation, it would seem to fully qualify for yichud. That's not the top of the tshuva. It just occurred to me, as we're talking about the Rambam holds, there are a lot of women around, it's not yichud. I would just point out that question of yichud depends on what those women are going to do. If it's common for, you know, even if you have 15 women in a room, if one of the friends of that group of 15 decides she wants to have sexual relations with a man, they'll do it right there, nobody will care, then that's yichud, whether or not the halacha technically says yichud, it seems to me. And Rashi says that even with multiple women, it's definitely, he thinks it's always yichud, meaning even if the scenario I laid out wasn't true, because he thinks that you might get separated anyway. But when there's lots and lots of men and women around, so that would seem to not be to be a problem of yichud, and therefore, Simchas Beis HaShoeivah isn't really a yichud issue. The issue is kalat rosh. The issue is, and that's prohibited, that's wrong, of its own, even if it never leads to anything worse or anything more than just kalat rosh. And now Rav Moshe Feinstein defines kalat rosh. Shehu, leharbot sicha b'nehem, to have extra conversation, to have extended conversations, ulenegia b'yedehem kodome, or touching hands. And by touching hands, I don't think he means necessarily holding hands in a sexual way. He means just touching each other and just getting calm, getting sort of relaxed enough with each other that touching goes on. So to prevent that's kalat rosh. Kalat rosh is that kind of interaction, those kinds of things where just the talking itself is a problem, and that it could lead possibly to even tiny bit more is a problem. And therefore, they tried putting the women on the outside and it still didn't work because there was no mechitza. So even though when we say there's no mechitza, we're not talking about there's no valid mechitza. The mechitza just means a wall in halacha. And there are many other halachot for which these mechitzot counted as walls, counted as not a barrier, but a demarcation, a separation line. But you'll have mechitzos, let's say, for kilayim issues. Another example is if I want to separate an area to be able to carry within that area on Shabbat, right? So you're going to, you know, I'm going to build a backyard fence. So there too, the standard is 10 tefachim, which is about, which is a little less than, about 4 feet, maybe a little less than 4 feet. So it's not nearly the mechitzot that Rav Moshe Feinstein is going to talk about. So there's mechitza. He's very clear. There are, the standard of mechitza and halacha for almost all halachot, for many, many halachot, is 10 tefachim, which is not 4 feet, which is 3 feet and a little, or 3 feet and a little bit. We're going to see later in the tshuva that Rav Moshe Feinstein thinks that that we need here 18 tefachim. We'll get to why in a minute. But if you need 18 tefachim, which he says elsewhere, another tshuva that we don't have in front of me right here is 60 inches, meaning that he thinks that each tefach is 3 1/3 inches. So 10 tefachim would be 33 1/3 inches, which isn't even quite 3 feet. For almost all, for many, many areas of halacha, that's a fine mechitza. He's not arguing that point. His point is the mechitza that we need here is not about a mechitza in the technical sense of a wall. I think there was a time in Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik's Zechus life where he thought that a 10 tefachim mechitza would be good enough to fill the mechitza issue. He was also very adamant that shuls needed mechitzot, but that there was a period of his time where he thought that a mechitza like that qualified for mechitza. The mechitza was more about making a demarcation, making clear that the men were being separated from the women, and that there was at least a time that he thought that was enough. Rav Moshe Feinstein is pointing out that he is arguing here. Rav Moshe Feinstein is saying he's pretty clear that's not enough, because if that was true, you had separations like that in the Beit HaMikdash even before you built the balcony, and yet they didn't feel it was good enough. And again, his overarching point is that you couldn't have built that balcony unless it was necessary. Because to build new structures in the Beit HaMikdash that are not required by some kind of Torah law is not allowed because of the pasuk of HaKol Bichtam, that the Beit HaMikdash was built according to very clear and specific instructions. That's the way that's the way his reasoning goes. And therefore, the meaning of the mechitza here, because the mechitza here isn't about a mechitza being a wall, it's about being enough of a separation that men and women will not be able to have comfortable extended conversations, and they'll not be able to have any kind of reasonable, easily, you know, leading to casual touching or anything like that. So based on all of that reasoning, it's preferable, he says, that you'd build a balcony for women. Right? You need to, and the reason for the balcony is when you have women in a balcony, there's clearly not going to be any kind of easy conversation or touching going on. And he says, we'll get to it, but he says that a balcony doesn't in mechitza anything other than what will stop them from falling over. Right? You need whenever you build a structure like on top, a roof, a balcony, you need, halachically, you need to make sure that people aren't going to fall over. But that height is much less than the height he's going to require for mechitza on the ground. And so, and he's going to get to why isn't it a problem of looking at women, and men and women looking at each other. We'll get to that in a second. But he says, but if you can't build it, you can't build a balcony for some reason, then you need a mechitza, and the mechitza has to stop kalut rosh. Right? So it can't be just a mechitza, halachic mechitza, a wall of separation halachically. It has to stop kalut rosh, and therefore 10 tefachim isn't enough, because that's nothing in terms of kalut rosh. Right? If you have a mechitza that's 3 feet high, so men and women can talk as if there's nothing there, so that can't it, right? They can talk, they can have extended conversations, and there's no issue. So therefore he suggests, now this part, I think it's worth noting that he doesn't have a specific source for it. He says he thinks it's got to be up until the shoulders, above the shoulders. Now, why above the shoulders is the thing? He says because, I think it's because he thinks there's no easy touching then, because to reach over that, if it's something that's above your shoulder, you have to reach up and over, and it becomes much more difficult to actually have any kind of physical interaction. I think it. Now, you could say, well, but they can see each other, right? He says, well, mechitza isn't about being able to see each other. Because if you remember the Gemara in Sukkah, when they started off with the men, with the women inside, the men outside, then they switched it. It was clear that everybody could be looking at everybody else, because they were trying to see the celebrations that were going on inside the Beit HaMikdash, inside the courtyard of the Beit HaMikdash itself. So if that's true, then apparently the fact that the men would see the women, or when they switched, the women would see the men, that wasn't the issue. The issue was they were still having Kalat Rosh, and therefore they had to build a balcony. Which shows you that Kalat Rosh, Histaklut, it's not like it's permitted for men and women to stare at each other. But that wasn't the factor that led the Beit HaMikdash to require a balcony. If that's true, then when we're mimicking it in our Bate Knesset, in our shuls, then when we're not mimicking it, we're imitating it, we are emulating it, we are acting according to that standard, and we can't build a balcony. It can't be the histaklut issue is not the deepest concern, and therefore if the mechitza doesn't stop histaklut, that's not going to be a deep problem for Moshe Feinstein. And he says, and of course also, when you have the gezustra, a balcony doesn't necessarily have a mechitza that stops men and women from seeing each other. So if that's true, then he doesn't think that seeing each other is the issue. Now it is true, there's a Rambam Pirush Mishnayos who talks about not seeing each other, right? So it doesn't fit with Moshe Feinstein's saying, so he finds a way to explain that Rambam. He thinks that once the men were on down and the women went up, they also wouldn't see each other. Or that all he meant was that once they're down, I'm sorry, the women are up and the men are down, even if they saw each other, it could never lead to Kalat Rosh. And when he says you can't see each other, he meant the kind of seeing, not just the seeing itself, but the seeing that would lead to the inappropriate activity. But regardless of how you understand that Rambam, he says, if you look at the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah, where he's posketing things, he doesn't talk about histaklut, he talks about the machitza, the separation, the gezustra, as a separation, so they shouldn't be mixing together, and therefore, that's the way he understands it. So from his understanding, therefore, and again, this already is an understanding part. He thinks once it reaches the shoulders, it should be okay, and therefore he thinks it's 3 amot, which is 18 tvachim, not in this tshuva, but another tshuva, he says that that's 60 inches, which is a well-known standard, which, again, becomes an interesting question. It's 5 feet, the standard for what reaches women's shoulders. So you'd have to get into the averages of Jewish women's height, and I think you'd want to talk about the average, or maybe you talk about the median Jewish height for Jewish women, and if it grows over time, then you'd want to say the mechitzas would have to get higher over time, and or lower, depending on whatever it is. But his idea is it's got to reach above the shoulders. He thinks that means 5 feet. And those who want to make it higher, he thinks tavol echem bracha, that you're not even going to see their heads, that's even better, especially since, unfortunately, many women don't cover their hair. He says it's a whole conversation of its own, and we're not going to get into it, right? But many women don't cover their hair. Theoretically, halakhically, you're not supposed to daven when there's erva around, when there's something uncovered around that's not supposed to be uncovered. So, you know, if a woman's literally naked, you're not allowed to daven there. But already there, Aruch HaShulchan, in the late 1800s, it ruled that because so many women don't cover their hair, it's become a common enough thing that that's not a reason why you can't daven with hair uncovered around. So therefore, even if the mechitza doesn't stop men from seeing women's heads and therefore hairs when it's uncovered, that he thinks is a valid mechitza, although there's certainly a reason to make it higher for those other reasons. So you get into other questions there, of course, because then women get upset if the mechitza is higher, and that's why also, although he doesn't point it out, that's why also a balcony is really a much more excellent solution, because then women's line of sight is not impeded, and they don't feel, you know, left out in terms of being able to see what's going on, and able to enjoy what's going on, but all these other issues have been dealt with. And he does say, you could argue that maybe all that was only the Beit HaMikdash that was the Torah requirement, because you could say, there's a pasuk in the Torah that says, Mikdashi Tiro, the experience of being in a Beit HaMikdash, in the temple, was one that required, halakhically required, awe. So if it required awe and fear, so that could be, you could say, well, there, you have to make an absolute structure that makes sure there won't be any colored rose, because that's such an obvious violation of Yira. But maybe when we want to extend that to a shul, perhaps you could argue that that would be a derabana. That when Chazal said we have this thing called a shul, we have a thing called a Beit HaKnesset, which is a Mikdash Ma'at, which is like a Beit HaMikdash in a lot of ways. So then they said, and there too, we don't want you to have Kalat Rosh, and the way to avoid Kalat Rosh is the same way that you didn't make a Mikdash. But maybe that's a Dirabanan. So Moshe Feinstein says, even if you want to argue that way, at the time of davening, or you're going to mention Hashem's name, or you're going to have discussions of Torah, or you're going to read from the Torah, or you're going to say Kedusha, there he thinks it's got to be dealt right as well, because when we have a Kedusha in davening, we say Kedusha in davening, so the Ran in Megillah writes, She'ikaruo asui lomar bo devar shebikdusha. The point of a place of Kedusha, and the point of sanctifying a place, is to be able to say things that are devar shebikdusha, and devarim shebikdusha, things that are said with sanctity, that have to be said with full sanctity to them, like Kedusha in davening, that would seem to, Rav Moshe Feinstein, to be require the sanctity that the Torah sets up. The Torah, he just pointed out, he understands the Torah to set up that sanctified kinds of occasions and kinds of events require separation of men and women with a mechitza to make sure that they are actually separated in those ways. And therefore, he says, he thinks this halacha of mechitza is b'chol makom kibbutz. Any place together. And this is another complicated question, which he's not going to fully clarify because we're coming close to the end of the responsum and the end of our time. But he thinks, because his proof pasuk was about a hesped. It was about a public mourning situation. Now there too, so does he mean, I raised this at the beginning, does he mean that he thinks that every time you're at a hesped, you're at a mourning situation, you should have a mechitza? Could be. Then you'd say that every time you go to a funeral, there should be a, not just men and women sit separately, but there should be a mechitza at the funeral, would be his argument. Because that wasn't at the Beit HaMikdash. But then you'd have to argue, well, then every time people gather, right? So every time people gather, I mean, you need a mechitza at a wedding ceremony. There are people who do this today, right? There are vintage weddings where there's a mechitza at the wedding ceremony. You could have, I'm trying to think of other thing, places where people gather. So, by the way, he says is b'chol makom shetzrichim lekabet bo anashim v'nashim. Wherever you're going to have a place where men and women have to get together, you have to have a mechitza so that they don't have any kalut rosh. Now, I will say that I've been to weddings, as I said, I've been to weddings where they have mechitzas at the chuppah, they have mechitzas for the meal, right? But those mechitzas always leave open places where men and women can gather anyway. So it's an odd thing, right? What you define as the place where if you're required to avoid it, gatherings of men and women, they're not be kalut rosh, but the entranceways you leave open. So maybe you could argue that the simple basis shoyev whether it was true as well. I don't know. I think it's a hard argument to make. And a hesped is also a strange thing, and this would sort of weaken his argument somewhat. It's a strange thing because that's a time when people aren't really focused on kalut rosh. It's a hesped; they're involved in mourning. So he thinks that proves his point, that even if even there, they just said you had to be separated from each other, and that was the support for building the Beit HaMikdash. It shows you that yira and the appropriate seriousness about things requires a mechitza. So a bekes derabanan, but at time of tefillah, you need to tell right, right? At time of davening, you need it on a Torah level, that he said, but he thinks, as I said a second ago, no, anytime when men and women are getting together. Now, if they don't need to get together, he says, if there's no requirement that they get together, so after Mikdash Mutar, he thinks even the Beit HaMikdash, then they could have men and women in the same place. Meaning it's not that whenever men and women are around, it's not like three men and seven women who are in the same place, Nina Mechitza. Because he points out that when Hannah came to pray for her son, she's standing right in front of Eli, and there's no evidence there was any kind of a separation between them. There's a Gemara condition that talks about women pushing their way into the Beit HaMikdash in certain situations, and Tosfos say that women can go into the Azara, even if they need to, or in various ways. But what about the Mechitza situation? So Moshe Feinstein is saying now, at the very end of the Tshuva, that they'll need the Mechitza when there's some obligation, some need to gather. So that would be like public occasions. Simchas Pesach Shoeva, the celebration of the libating of the water, that would be a public situation. I think you could argue that weddings would be an occasion where men and women have to gather, although it's not clear, because it could be their emotional fights. Maybe he would argue, no, they don't have to gather. They want to gather, therefore, that celebration. But Simchas Pesach Shoeva was like a requirement to come. But you get into that question of what counts as has to gather and what counts as just we're gathering here for something and whether we do or don't need a mechitza. But certainly davening would be a case where you have to gather because you're getting there to daven together. And therefore you need a mechitza, and you need a mechitza that will stop, that will make sure that there isn't kalut rosh, and that he thinks is up above the shoulders. And that is the response of the day for the 22nd day of Tevet. Rav Moshe Feinstein on Mechitza issues. Thank you to the OU, to Rabbi Jacob Abrams, David Hochhauser. I hope you enjoyed, and be in touch. My email is grothst@gmail.com. Have a great day.